Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Jonathan Bennett joins me. We're going to be talking about Vista, a medical record system that's open source and free to use, and the VA already uses it everywhere. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Jonathan Bennett. Episode 508, recorded November 28th, 2018. Vista and RPMS. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Command Line Heroes, a podcast from Red Hat. Listen to the epic true tales of the developers, programmers, hackers, geeks, and open source rebels revolutionizing the technology landscape. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and visit redhat.com/heroes today. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, projects you may be using every day and totally unaware of it, projects you might want to download and play with right after this show. Not sure which one of these is going to be today, but as always, we have a really interesting show planned coming up here. But first, let me bring on my wonderful and talented co-host, Jonathan Bennett. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Randall. It's good to be here once again.
And it looks like you're in that same Oklahoma place, the place that's okay?
Yes, we are still okay here, although hopefully in the next month or two, we're going to be moving to a different house, different office okay. There. But still a lot in Oklahoma, yes, you can still wave as you fly over.
Okay, good. Yes, because I do that from time to time. I go from bicoastal, and I'm kind of there's a lot of flyover states though, that I have never been to, and Oklahoma, I think, is one of those that qualifies. I am speaking to you, for those of you that are watching the video, from the ZipRecruiter headquarters. I'm on the 11th floor. Behind me is the Pacific Ocean and some buildings if you're looking at the video. If you're not looking at the video, it would be hard to tell anything like that because I sound the same no matter where I'm at, so that's no big deal. So today, I think, is going to be an interesting show on multiple levels. So we're going to be talking about Vista and RPMS, which are comprehensive electronic health records and hospital management systems that originate from the VA and the Indian Health Service, and they've been modified for use outside the VA, including by those in the open source community. We're going to be bringing on in just a couple minutes Sam Habiel, I'll have to ask him if that's how it's pronounced, and Nancy Anthracite, and they're going to be talking to us about this project. Now, the project is interesting from an open source perspective. I think it's also the first time on the show we've ever talked about mumps. So that'll be interesting. And it'll be the first time that we say that DHCP doesn't stand for dynamic, what does DHCP stand for in computers? I keep forgetting. But it's for them, it's the something, I got to scroll back here. I should have scrolled before I said that. Anyway, it has a different meaning to them. We can ask them what it means. So this project is interesting. It was basically a grassroots effort to make something that actually works and also let people convert over from paper records to having electronic records and then go even further and share those electronic records with other hospitals. One of the success stories I saw in it is that in Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, the only people that still have their medical records from that were the ones that had their data in Vista. And I think that's an amazing thing to as an accomplishment. So what do you know about this so far, Jonathan?
I've had a little bit of experience trying to hoist open source software on the government myself. And I know that there are lots and lots of regulations and red tape and just kind of negative attitudes towards it that makes it really a challenge. So this does kind of tick some of the interesting boxes for me as far as, you know, people have in an underground railroad sort of way managed to put some open source stuff in the government in a way that works. And I'm definitely looking forward to hearing more about that story.
Yes, there's definitely going to be some government involvement as part of the story, but I will let that remain suspense for just a couple minutes. But before we bring our guests on today, I do have a very important announcement, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Command Line Heroes, an original podcast for geeks, by geeks, from Red Hat, an open source company that has been bringing open source technologies to the enterprise for 25 years. What is a Command Line Hero? They are the developers, programmers, hackers, geeks, and open source rebels who are revolutionizing the technology landscape. Command Line Heroes is hosted by Saran Yetbarak, a developer who founded Code Newbie and lives and breathes open source software. Season 2 of Command Line Heroes is all about living on the command line and tracking the changes that shape the world of open source development, from programming languages to learning about supercomputers, hybrid clouds, and more. The latest episode covers the data explosion, how big data is going to help solve big problems, and how to handle it. Kenneth Kukier explains how data has changed and how it's beginning to change us. Dr. Ellen Grant shares how the Boston's Children's Hospital is using open source software to transform data into individualized treatments. And Sage Wheel shows how Ceph's scalable and resilient cloud storage helps manage the data flood. Visit redhat.com/heroes to check it out today. Subscribe to Command Line Heroes wherever you get your podcasts. And visit redhat.com/heroes for extras and to learn more. That's redhat.com/heroes. And we thank Command Line Heroes from Red Hat for their support of Floss Weekly. And let's go ahead and bring on our guests. So, Sam, welcome to the show. Sam Habiel?
Yeah, hello. Thank you for having me.
And where are you speaking to us from?
Well, I would like to say that I am Mordor adjacent. I live in the D.C. area.
just down the street from all the beasts. Okay, good.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
And let's go ahead and also bring on Nancy Anthracite. Nancy, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here. And I'm talking to you from Gaithersburg, Maryland.
So you're sort of in the same general vicinity, I guess. I don't know my East Coast geography that well. So, but you're both on the East Coast. That part I know, because I fly to the East Coast.
I work in D.C. and Sam works in Virginia, and we're probably about 45 minutes apart. And but except when I'm at work, I work in downtown D.C. So.
Okay, cool. So let's start with Sam. What problem is someone trying to solve when they start using Vista?
So the problem that Vista is trying to solve is an electronic medical record, and it's the software you would use to keep patient data and keep a lot of other data, including inventory and incident statistics and whatnot in any large hospital. That's its problem area, and that's what it's trying to solve.
Now, you say large hospital. Is it also usable for, say, a small doctor's office?
Well, that's a very good question to ask at this point. Vista just happens to be too complex for small doctor's offices, but there are many doctor's offices that have actually used it successfully and some that still do.
And how long has Vista been around, and what got it started?
Vista has been around in one form or another since 1979. It's that old, and it's been through several incarnations, so to speak. But I guess the main you would say it started appearing in the VA. In an operational capacity, like when it was actually recognized as operating a lot of the hospital around 1983.
And what were people using before Vista?
Well, paper, pretty much. There's an article that it's going to be in the show notes on the website hardhats.org, and I'll have to talk about how come we have the word hard hats in the ecosystem. But there was various centralized attempts to make Vista to make an electronic medical record for the hospital. They were almost invariably based on, they were center-driven, and they have not achieved much success. Vista was basically a big underground effort that people were doing in the field to actually create a system that will actually work for patient care. And what's surprising was, the system developed in the field actually worked, but not the system developed by all the contractors and all the central planning never worked. This pattern persists to this day, by the way. So this is we tend to find out that any system developed usually by the end users tends to work, whereas any centrally planned system doesn't work.
And Nancy, I want to ask you, as a doctor, what is unusual about patient records and the data that you're storing there? I mean, data management is a solved problem. Why is Vista unusual and why did it have to be created? Since there's already central data management.
Well, I think there's a couple of things, and the technical aspects is I think that the nature of the data and the speed that it has to be available at makes something like the MUMPS programming system important, because it's generally much faster than an SQL database or something else. And the it was basically the language was designed to support medical record systems. But the other thing is that it's complex, and this system was developed to serve the end user the way the end user needed to be served. And the information inside Vista is extensive, not just in what data is there, but what you can learn about how people work in different settings by all the configuration options and et cetera that there are in Vista. In addition, Vista was designed, I should mention, not for billing and the rest. It's designed for patient care. And it wasn't until much more recently that billing was even considered as part of Vista. So it's unusual in that sense. It's designed to support the user and patient care.
And what sort of queries are you making about a particular patient that would require like high-speed access to the data? Why isn't SQL sufficient for that?
Well, generally, when you have an SQL database, it doesn't return quick enough. The VA shoots to have any query or any button that's pushed or anything else return within a tenth of a second. And a lot of material has to be done quickly. In addition, when you ask for just one thing, like a drug, a lot of times there's multiple systems that are queried, like the lab system, the pharmacy system, and maybe inventory. A lot of different things are queried at once, so that you need a lot of speed in the back end to query all those things. There's something called Vivian on the Osera website that somebody might want to look at to give you an idea of the complexity of trying to run a medical record system.
And so is this actually, when it's set up in a hospital, is it actually a distributed system? Is there like a machine in the lab and a machine in the inventory place and a machine that the doctors have access to on the floor?
They usually have a Vista instance per hospital, and all of those access that Vista system, but there's various equipment that feeds into it. For instance, in the lab, there'll be multiple instruments that send data to Vista. In the pharmacy, there's the dispensing equipment that will send data to Vista at the same time that the technicians are trying to put out the prescriptions and check, if everything is right with the patient that matches up with this prescription. Are there any duplicates? All those sort of things are going on in the background.
Now, one of the things I understand from reading that article that I'm going to keep bringing up, the conspiracy article, is that Vista was designed at a grassroots level. The doctors actually worked closely with the programmers. And in fact, sometimes the doctors who had a knack for programming even changed things themselves. Is that true?
Yes. I wasn't involved in that, but that's absolutely true. Dr. Fletcher in D.C. is fond of talking about coming in the morning with a new idea and having it in the system by the end of the day because he worked with a programmer every day.
Sam, when you're interacting with this thing, is it like a GUI or is it like command line stuff or a bunch of screens?
Okay, great question, and I'll answer it. So Vista is a very big piece of software. So every way you could interact with it it actually exists. So basically, end users tend to use one of two things. They tend to use Delphi clients written in Delphi, running on Microsoft Windows, and a smaller set of users uses a terminal window correctly, and it's basically a VT100 terminal. A terminal emulated text output, which you process through. Originally, the VT100 output was all of Vista that back in the early 90s before the Delphi clients. If The other ways to interact with Vista is, you know, you can it offers web services, so you could interact with it using web services, and you can also Vista is usually part of Vista has a mail program that plays a big part of it, a big part of the software. So it listens to mail messages. And if you're ever in medicine, there's something called HL7, and it's a message format. And so Vista sends and receives HL7 messages from all sorts of different instruments in hospitals to transmit patient data between the instruments. So all of these are ways you could interact with Vista, but mainly end users tend to use Delphi clients, and some end users tend to use the VT100 emulation. In the business, we don't call it VT100. We just call it roll and scroll, and that's what users are familiar with.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to jump in and ask, and this may be a question for Nancy more. One of the things that I get to do is help some doctor's offices with their HIPAA compliance. And a program this old sounds like just a headache for trying to do HIPAA compliance. Is Vista usable in a HIPAA compliant environment?
Yes. Yes, it is usable in a HIPAA compliant environment. You have to configure it correctly, of course. It uses a combination of using the operating system you're on for security, and also it tracks access to patients. You can audit all of that. And you can actually keep people from seeing certain patients if you want, that sort of thing. So, it can be operated in a HIPAA-compliant manner.
Well, that's useful for trying to get it in place going forward, now that HIPAA is one of the big things that everyone has to worry about. Something we haven't talked about is RPMS. What is RPMS, and what is the relationship with Vista?
All right, let me take that, Nancy.
Sure.
Yeah.
So RPMS is actually, people say, you know, it was basically a fork of Vista. It technically isn't. Basically, RPMS was a conscious decision by the Indian Health Service, which is a branch of the U.S. government that has to care for American Indians under a 1954 act, which obliges the U.S. government to provide health care for all American Indians / Alaska Natives. And what they did is, you know, they had to move from an old platform that basically ran in certain areas of the country, and they looked around and they saw that for cost of ownership and for clinical use, there was an existing software in the departments of Veterans Affairs. They had a problem though at that time, which is back in the 1980s, basically before around 1990, the VA health system was strictly inpatient only, whereas Indian Health Service pretty much provides almost only outpatient care. So what they did is that they took the infrastructure from Vista, which basically provides platform independence over your computers, and they wrote their own clinical applications on top of it. And so that came out to be RPMS, and RPMS stands for Resource and Patient Management System. And we have already learned, you know, from whenever you type RPMS, autocorrect always changes it to RPMs. Like it thinks it's like a Red Hat package manager thing. No, it's its own abbreviation. That's the history of RPMS in a nutshell. And going forward, both RPMS and Vista shared a lot of code with each other. So when the VA started providing outpatient services, starting in the early 90s, they took a lot of the RPMS source code that was developed for RPMS, and they incorporated it into Vista.
So what are the licensing of these two programs look like, so that it's possible to be able to do that kind of sharing of source code?
So since the software is developed by was developed by government employees, the software is considered to be public domain. And so the way that people got software originally was basically putting in what's called in the United States a FOIA request, which is a Freedom of Information Act request. And that you put in a FOIA request and you know, you would get mailed some CDs or floppy disks containing the source code. And I came of age. I came of age and started participating in this community much later, later than those stages. And I think, but I've heard a lot of nice stories of people. You know, they ask for the software, and they just they tell you, well, you could get this an investment of millions of dollars for, you know, just pay shipping, and which is like $10 to get a disk.
So there's something that's interesting I want to dig into here. Whenever a U.S. government employee writes code, it's automatically it's free. It's not even licensed. It's just public domain. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct.
And so then what happens when someone that is not a government employee sends a pull request, sends a patch, and wants to add it in? What's the licensing for that bit of code, and how do those two mesh together?
Well, that has been a very interesting discussion and an interesting issue, and you probably already realize that. Historically, you know, back in the early open source days of Vista and RPMS, basically the way that you shared code is you make a modification, you send it back to the developer, and the developer applies it as their own code, and then you get it back via another FOIA release. So it just stayed public domain.
So thinking about copyright law, is that actually how that works? Because when someone writes something it's someone that's not a government employee, when they write anything, it's automatically copyright with full rights reserved. If a lawyer really wanted to dig into it, are there some strange licensing issues in Vista that just have not been resolved?
You're absolutely right about that. There are some strange licensing issues in Vista, but what protects us is basically the assurance of self-destruction, is that if everybody started suing everybody, because there are so many there are so many people who have their hands in Vista, and most of them are not known. Actually, most of the source code is at this point in time there has been a lot of, you know, government contractors that have had their hands inside of Vista, and you actually have to write into the contract how the source code gets licensed for government use. But typically, none of the copyright information is tracked. So basically, you are looking at not being able to track any of this information. So it's basically impossible right now to disambiguate. And so to simplify it to people, we just say that Vista right now is public domain, because that's what it effectively is.
Is there an issue if someone, like a network of private hospitals wanted to use Vista? Do they really have any guarantee that they're not going to get hit with a copyright lawsuit or copyright claim? I mean, I'm kind of shuddering on the inside hearing about this.
There's no documentation on the source code whatsoever to tell you what's copyrighted or what's not, and it's all a mix of different people's source code. So that's the reality, unfortunately.
All right. Oh, understood. So to switch gears slightly, it seems that there's been some pushback within the government against Vista and maybe even RPMS. Historically, what has that pushback looked like?
And Nancy, would you like to answer that?
Yeah, for a long time, there's been a lot of people saying that Mumps is old and this is old and we need to replace the software. And it's been probably almost 20 years that the VA has been threatening to replace Vista. And they actually cut back on some of the development they were doing inside the VA as a result of that. So they have the best of the developers. There's some that remain, but a lot of them aren't there. And they started using contractors, which has been an issue because a lot of times the contractors don't know the software well enough. So they blow hundreds of millions of dollars on trying to develop it. But I want to put a plug in here. What they really need to do is rebuild their developer core inside the VA to do the development, so they will stop screaming about wasting hundreds of millions of dollars on contracts that don't work, and get back the developers that are needed to, they were able to turn over and improve packages every couple of years when they were inside the VA and they were working as a group, just small groups of developers on the various packages. So now the most recent thing, which is, a tragedy in my view, is that the VA's decided to replace Vista with Cerner, which is a closed source medical record system that is not really designed for caring for veterans. And it is primarily, they takes care of patients, but it's also a lot of it's involved about billing. And that's not what Vista's about. And that's probably going to cost, the current prediction is $16.25 billion to replace it, and we're predicting that it's going to be more like $30 billion if they're successful. So.
Goodness, that is a lot of money to spend on software. So is Vista currently still being used in the VA, or is it being phased out slowly, or is this just something to look forward to in the future?
It's absolutely being used. That's all it's being used. It hasn't been implemented any. Cerner hasn't been implemented anywhere inside the VA. And I must say, I think it was the I forget which agency took a look at what Cerner will be able to replace that Vista offers, and it's only 41% of the capability of Vista. So not only will you have to replace Vista, but you're going to have to replace all the financial management system and ordering systems and all the rest that's supported by Vista in addition. So it will be extremely expensive to replace it. And you may or may not have seen that link in what Sam wrote up, that really Vista was the top-rated system by end users. And Cerner is down, halfway down the pack in terms of whether people like using it or not.
Now, we've mentioned it, I think, the idea of M or Mumps as a programming language. But I'm curious, this is not a programming language that I'm familiar with. What is Mumps?
All right.
So
I think Sam should take that question. All right. So what is Mumps? Well, that's a very hard question to answer, but I'll try to tell you what Mumps is and why it's important in Vista. So M basically is a programming language developed in the late 1960s. In an animal hospital in Massachusetts General Hospital, in an animal lab in a Massachusetts General Hospital. Back in the day, it had two big innovations compared to systems at the time. One is it had sparse data storage, and that is, compared with all the other systems, which, they stored every single record, every single piece of a record, whether it existed or not. Mumps had the capability of just storing data that only existed at the time, and that's part of what made it really fast and very useful for medicine. The other part about Mumps that's really, really important, especially in the context of Vista, is that by 1978, it was an ISO standardized language. So when you go to the government and tell them, you can use a vendor neutral language, any vendor could implement it, and Yeah, you can run your system, and if you don't like a single vendor, you could basically move your system to another vendor, or you own the data. You don't get any vendor lock-in. That was a big selling point of MUMS. And the other big point was, you know, it's the fact that it came out of the medical community. It was designed for storing sparse data, and medical data is extremely sparse. So basically, it meant that, you know, if you're going to go out to try to store the kind of data that medicine stores in the late 70s, early 80s, you basically had nothing that could approach MUMS in terms of efficiency. I wrote up something here, and I just want to make sure I have all the notes. So Vista actually was really very much tied with MUMS as because basically the people who standardized MUMS, whose names are Marty Ivers and Ted O'Neill, came from the National Bureau of Standards, and they worked at the VA, and they wanted to introduce the system over there. And you could read about that in the history that we're going to have hopefully in the show notes. So I just want to make just a few things on MUMS. MUMS tends to have a bad rap, especially for people who have never seen it before and they're trying to code in it for the first time. It's basically, it looks a certain way, and the way you could write unreadable Perl code or unreadable C code, you could also write unreadable M code. M has been, I'm going to say, extremely successful and extremely helpful in Vista and RPMS, because what happened is it provided a stable foundation for people to actually develop software and know that the same software you wrote 10 years ago, 15 years ago, will still run. Today, a lot of software, you don't get that guarantee. You write something in today's JavaScript framework, 2 years, 3 years, it's probably you won't be able to try to build it again or run it again. It's a problem. It's really a problem. Let me see, what else do I want to say about M? Oh, no, I think I've said enough. Let's move on.
I was going to ask. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I just want to say we are going to talk in a couple of weeks with YataDB. And YataDB is an M implementation, which we run Vista on. So we can talk about M in more detail over there if we wish.
Awesome. So I was just going to ask.
Could I mention something?
M,
people kind of thumb their noses at M, but I want to mention that there's a lot of medical record systems that have it in the background. And one of them, if people that know medical record systems, is Epic is built on M.
Okay, cool. What platforms does M run on? And is it down to the bare metal, or is there usually an operating system underneath it?
You are asking a question right on the money, because it's a right on the money question.
It's not my first show.
Yes, I know. The day M was written back in the day, back in the late 70s, early 80s, the way M was written, M was the actual operating system. There was nothing else on the machine. So you would actually go buy a machine from DEC, and it would just run MUMS on it. That's it. There's nothing else. Nowadays, it's usually written. It's usually a database program written on an operating system, and because a lot of M implementations have been around for a long time, you're going to see the major enterprise system supported. So they typically support VAX machines, but they're on their way out now. They support IBM AIX, IBM S Series, Linux, of course, and right now, and there are several implementations that run on a Mac, and there are several that run on Microsoft Windows. So basically, you name it, it basically runs on it at this point.
And what do most people choose to run Vista on?
Vista, by and large, right now, as of today, is being run on Linux.
Oh, that's great. So there's another open source aspect of this. Yay. I like that already. What is the development process for this? Is Vista a monolithic code base, or are there like components to it that people can choose to install or not install?
Unfortunately, it is a monolithic code base.
Sam, you need to mention the things that interface with it, that you can use with it. It's not go ahead.
So I'm thinking of the M code base, but what are you thinking of, Nancy?
CPRS is just an example of something that talks to the database, and then people have developed other systems that do the same thing. You've developed some of them. So,
yes, that's absolutely true. So I'm thinking of monolithic based on, you know, the M code base. The M code base is monolithic, and unfortunately, you know, without a lot of effort, you can't separate parts out of it to just develop independently. Not easily, at least. You know, there are some very independent packages in M, but by and large, the main packages are really talk a lot to each other. But Nancy's right that, you know, a lot of the programs that talk to Vista, like the Delphi clients, these are all separate programs, and they're developed completely independently and usually by separate teams and with people who actually don't even know MUMS but know Delphi. And of course, if you're talking to Vista using web services, you don't. You just care about the input and the output. You don't really care about how it's done inside of Vista.
Now, please tell me this is under some kind of change control system that everybody else has access to.
That's a very good wish. Vista is actually the way we at Osera keep Vista under Git version control. So we actually have it, and the way we make code changes in Vista is we use GitHub and pull requests and whatnot. Inside of the VA, they have been using something called IBM Rational, I believe.
And
I don't really know how successfully, but it's been one of the struggles. It's actually, when it's time for the next question, you're going to ask us about, you know, what are the challenges we have? That's actually one of our challenges, which is, I've not been very successful in getting a lot of, you know, former VA developers to convert to start using version control.
Okay.
This program comes out of a very different culture, and it's not the culture of the Linux kernel and the culture of everybody gets to patch the system and everybody gets to hack on it. This is like, you know, people, a lot of, you know, sort of gatekeepers who actually say what code could go in and so on.
Okay. Now, hopefully, I'm going to cringe at the next answer, I'm real sure as well. Unit testing, integration testing?
Unit testing and integration testing is done using, I have a derogatory term for it, I'm not going to say it, but it's done by humans. It's done by humans. Basically, if there's a new piece of software, you give it to humans to test everything in it and see if there's any problems. But having said that, now the software I developed today for Vista is all unit tested. And nice. We have a lot of unit tests to go with it. But, you know, if you want to just tell you that by and large, that's the state of affairs. And to be honest, it's actually a difficult problem to test Vista because there are so many different data points and a lot of things depend on each other that basically sometimes the only way to test something is, you know, you have to give it to end users with a test database and say, and just tell them, do everything you could think of, do it and see what happens.
Yeah, human testing does sort of work as long as you have the right litanies, you know, as long as you have the right scripts to follow, and you always follow exactly the same scripts. It's, you know, some of the things, for example, here at ZipRecruiter, they have to test with humans because it's really hard to do the kind of integration testing that really works because there's a lot of moving parts in the code base and there's a lot of interactions. Like when you create a new user in ZipRecruiter, the code base, you know, that will show up as a different ID each time on the live testing, you know, so you have to be able to get to that. Regardless, it's not going to be something you can just put a program on to make it work. Some of it's unit tested here. I think we have about 35-40% code coverage, which is not a lot, not enough ever. But that's why we have human testing too. So we got that. Before we get too far more into the show, because we're sort of getting down towards the wire here, I want to know what how do you pronounce it? Osera?
Osera. Okay. Yes, absolutely.
Talk to me about that. What is that?
You know, I've asked for documentation here. I'm trying to find where the part I'm supposed to read. Because so
you could do it off the cuff. It's fine.
No, so okay. Here we go. I actually asked my colleagues to prepare something for me so I could actually read it on the show. So it's a 501c6 nonprofit organization, a C6 rather than a C3, which is your typical nonprofit, but we're basically a membership-based organization. We were created by the Department of Veterans Affairs to be the curator of Vista software in the community and to help bring in source code back into the VA from the open source back into the VA. We continue to work and to support an open collaborative community to enabling open source software in health IT and government. We have 26 organizational members and over 850 individual members. We host free monthly innovation webinars on cutting edge topics and technology. And we also have an annual conference just outside of the DC area that draws around 200 attendees. This is something for, you know, when we're going to ask what we could offer the open source community. We have about 21 active work groups engaged in open source projects, initiatives, and discussions. And, you know, later at the end of the call, I could discuss some of the things that the open source community could help us with.
Well, why don't you go ahead and start doing that right now, since we are getting close to the end.
Oh, we are. My God, that's fast.
Yep. It does. It always goes by way fast. Yes, right.
Nancy told me that there's going to be almost no time to say anything that I want, and she's right. All right. So I prepared. I prepared a big document for the show that contains a lot more details plus all the links, and I'm hoping the Twit engineers could put it in their show notes. I have a link, and I'm hoping that would be possible.
Yeah. We'll get an email me right after the show, and I'll make sure it gets added to the four URLs that you gave me already.
Okay. So basically, I have two sections basically here is what can we offer the Floss Weekly community, and how can the Floss community help us? So the main thing we want to offer is that, you know, people usually come to us for two big reasons. They either want to implement an electronic medical record in their hospital or clinic, or they want to create an educational curriculum for doctors and nursing using electronic medical records. So implementing an EMR is difficult, and a lot of the difficulty has nothing to do with the software. It just has to do with the process of change management and rolling it out. So if you're interested in either of these, you know, Ostera has a lot of Docker images that people could use to run Vista and RPMS. And we have a version of Vista we call Vihu, V-E-H-U, that has a lot of data on it. World Vista makes makes the software that's actually deployed around the world an open source version of Vista. And Nancy, do you want to speak more on that?
Yeah. The major implementation we have is in Jordan, the country of Jordan, that's rolling it out in all the public hospitals and all the military hospitals in Jordan.
Wow.
It's also used in India at the All India Institute of Medical Sciences. And there's a number of other places, and some places we don't even know about because it's open source. So we also have... we try to provide support for that, in not in implementations, but, you know, answering questions and getting experts where they're needed to help people. And we have a support call that I think is, it may be in Sam's notes. If it isn't, I'll ask him to add it in, so that people can call and talk with us on Saturday morning at 10:30 Eastern time.
Okay. I do want to address the controversy just a little bit, the conspiracy, I should say, just a little bit, because we're almost out of time. It does go by very quickly. Believe me, I've done this, you know, hundreds of times, literally. So, yes, it does go by very quickly. Where's the pressure to replace Vista coming from? Is it the senior management at VA, or is it government overseeing the VA? I mean, where is the major pressure coming from?
You know, I think there's a lot of pressure coming from Congress, and part of the reason, I think, is for the reason I talked about before. They keep saying that, you know, this is old software, we need to modernize it. Then they decide to try and modernize it, and they get contractors that can't do the job right, because generally, you know, you don't have a lot of people on a big contract that really know Vista well. There's a few, but not many. So the contracts fail miserably, and then... well, people say, well, we need to get rid of Vista. It's Vista's fault. And so they're pushing for something that they think they could put the responsibility on somebody else besides the VA. And, you know, I think it's going to be a huge mistake. And it's such a loss of a valuable, well, it won't be a loss of software, because we will maintain it. Those of us out in the community will maintain it. But when you have the VA doing the development, you've got, you know, very strong development and new features coming out every single year. And to lose that by having the VA go away from Vista is just a crime, in my view.
What's the change velocity in lines of code per month or year, or however you want to measure that? And how do you roll out new releases?
I can't tell you how many lines of code. And, you know, you have the process of lines of code getting rewritten also. Mm-hmm. And it's not as very near as fast as it used to be. And yet it's still on the top of the heap of medical records, despite the fact that, like I said, that they didn't continue to replace the developers inside the VA who could really turn the code over quickly. And, you know, and they stopped telling people they couldn't make new packages. So it slowed things down, but at the same time, you know, they do what we do is patch it, or what the VA does, and we do too. Monthly, there's probably 30 to 40 changes that come out, and those get added by a system called KIDS, and that you can actively keep updating the software doing it that way. And that's what they've done. You know, they were told you can't make a new package, so what do? They enhance the current package.
nice end around there. That's pretty smart. Like I said, we're almost out of time. Is there anything we didn't ask that you want to make sure our audience is aware of before we have to let you go? Sam first.
So I just want to say, you know, I wanted to go into the section of how can the open source community help us / participate. Now,
yes, please.
Asking people to help participate in the development of Vista is a tall task. So that's not what I'm asking people to do, because you need to have a lot of experience plus some medical background. But what I would say is that we have several projects around Vista that could use help. I'll give you a few. We have several project groups at Osera. One of the more important ones, in my opinion, is a project to create synthetic patients. Synthetic patients are vital because, you know, we cannot use anonymous patient data as it is very easily re-identified. This is a non-Vista project. It's called Cynthia. And if you want to get involved, get in touch with me or with Osera. The other thing we're working on, there's a few other things, sorry. We're working on making Vista usable in other countries, and we are doing translations. And so if you speak German or Arabic, you could be very helpful in translating. Wine, the Linux software, runs CPRS, but it needs some modifications. One thing is an implementation of WinSock 2, if you know what that is. World Vista is looking for venues willing to host meetings for free. Usually these are universities. We have a wire protocol that if somebody would like to write a Wireshark dissector for. And the other thing is that, you know, Vista is part of a bigger ecosystem. There are other projects around it. And again, if you're interested in HL7, for example, there's an open source HL7 router called Mirth. If you're interested in quality reporting, well, there's a package called Pop Health. And I do want to say, you know, if you're interested in following Vista, I would like you to join Osera. Associate membership is free, and you'll get full access to our website and our mailing list.
Okay, and second, my light went out.
Your light went out. Video. That's good. Yeah,
It times out. So hold on. There we go. All right, it's on a motion sensor, and if I don't move in a while, it goes out automatically. Sorry, that's okay. And Nancy, same question for you.
So I want people to know that they can get a hold of me at nancy@worldvista.org if you have questions. And there's so many questions and things that could be covered that I'm more than happy to answer them. Send me an email and then we can talk on the phone if we need to. Also wanted to talk just briefly again about Vista for Education because, the medical record systems out there that are proprietary don't provide source code, and the users want to be able to make changes that they'd like to, and they also want to see what's under the sheets. So right now, what we call Vista for Education is an implementation of World Vista EHR, and the main standard bearer for that is University of Michigan, but there are others that use it and want to use it. And so I invite universities to get a hold of me, and I'd be happy to discuss it with you.
Great. That sounds wonderful. And since you're both programmers, I have to ask my two programming questions as well. What's your favorite text editor, and what's your favorite scripting language? Sam?
So I'm a Vim fan all the way through. Sorry, Randy.
Okay.
And as far as scripting, I thought about this a lot. Whenever I need to do any scripting, I usually use Bash. But Bash is really terrible at arithmetic and string processing. So if that's involved, I'll write it in mumps.
Cool. Well, that's sort of what I predicted. So that was a good thing there. And Nancy, same thing.
Well, you know, to say I'm a programmer is really a mistake. I do.
Okay.
I use Kate, and I do write in Bash, but I tell everybody, and it's absolutely true, if I write a program, it's usually because people will look at it and say, my God, that's awful. I got to rewrite it. So that's how I get anything in mumps that I try to do rewritten for sure. And half the time it happens in the Bash stuff, too.
Okay. That's a fair cop on that. Well, Sam and Nancy, it's been wonderful having you on the show, talking about this very critical project that's getting beaten up on, and that's sort of unfortunate, almost abandonware. Some would have to consider it, but that's. I wish the best of luck to you. I wish Congress would back up. You know, it's like and just leave you alone and fund it some more in the VA again so that we can keep having this wonderful piece of software continue to help us all out, because healthcare is really important, especially as all of us get older and all that sort of stuff. So thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you very much.
Cool. That was Sam Habiel and Nancy Anthracite talking to us about Vista and RPMS and a bunch of other stuff and politics and everything else. So what do you think there, Jonathan?
It sounds to me like it's actually quite a quandary of what the right thing to do here is, because, you know, obviously it's a very, very old code base, and we highlighted a couple of the pretty severe problems that they've got. I mean, the licensing issue, that's a big deal. Some other things going on. But at the same time, it sounds like it's meeting the needs of doctors and patients, which is a good thing. And, you know, there's nothing out there that really replaces it. So it's one of those times where, you know, political hacks on the left or the right will say, oh, no, this is the obvious thing to do. But reality is a little more complicated than that. And I don't know exactly what the correct solution is. I'm sure we'll eventually figure it out. But it is good to see people that still care about it. And, you know, while it's useful, people are still taking care of it. And that's a good thing.
Yeah. And I like that it was developed at the grassroots level. It was actually something that, you know, the doctors worked together with the programmers, and sometimes they were both, to really get it to be driven by demand. You know, where there was so much of the software that we use these days is, you know, people in a laboratory somewhere, well, not a medical laboratory, but like in a white room somewhere, you know, go, I think the customer's going to want this and this and this and this, and now we're going to spend 3 months in a waterfall method implementing some of that and shipping that and just seeing how it goes. Whereas here it's like, okay, a doctor says, I want this thing to work this way, and it can be implemented today. And I like that. That's a remarkable way to use, you know, real software, open source software. Well, I'm going to get yelled at for that from other people now, but I get yelled at a lot. So it doesn't really matter. let's run down. We're almost out of time. So let me run down the upcoming guests. Next week, OpenVPN. Again, after 11 years, I can't believe we haven't had these guys on yet. But OpenVPN, which many of you probably use, it's a VPN software. I use it inside a program for the Mac called TunnelBlick. So that gives me my interface to it, my GUI interface to it. So that's coming on next week. And as Sam mentioned earlier in the show, YattaDB is coming on, which is a new kind of database company delivering a proven database engine to your application, enhancing simplicity, security, stability, and scalability. That sounds real good. And then finally, the last show of the year, this year anyway, is Flutter. Eric Seidel is going to come on. Eric is a well-known spokesman for Flutter, works for Google. He's going to be coming on talking about Flutter. Flutter is approaching some real good milestones real soon, and so we'll find out more about that. By the way, Flutter is Google's mobile app. I'm sure you've heard me talk about it already. I don't need to do about that. Next year, we have Nextcloud. Nextcloud offers industry-leading on-premises file sync and online collaboration technologies. The only other guest scheduled for January right now is Zen, which is a hypervisor using microkernel design, providing services allow multiple computer operating systems to execute on the same computer hardware concurrently. It's pretty good stuff. If you have any questions about those shows or want to see who we've got on the shortlist coming up, go to the homepage for this show, twit.tv/floss. And if you want more projects on this show that you are passionate about, please tell the project leader or community coordinator to email me, merlin@stonehenge.com, and I will get them on very shortly. In fact, we've got a January 2nd slot open, so please let somebody suggest someone for January 2nd. That's a hard one to fill because it's so close to the holidays. Please let me know. We have a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays, almost always. And that's at live.twit.tv. We take questions from the chat room. Didn't really have any this time. We had a few interesting comments, but didn't have any questions. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus and at Floss Weekly on Twitter. By the way, I found out that's not going away. That brand account doesn't go away. It's only the personal Google Plus accounts that go away. So I'll have to actually make a brand of my name or something so I can keep it. And you can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus and at Merlin on Twitter. And my plugs right now, the only thing I've got on my schedule, it's a public event, is KubeCon, in KubeCon, the Stately Dome. Never mind. All right. It's in December in Seattle, which is the best time in the year to be in Seattle. Not really. But anyway, it's going to be cold and wet. I can already tell. I'm going to have fun there. It's a four-day conference and with lots of couple parties planned and a couple of press events planned, which is great because I get to go as press. Anything you want to plug, Jonathan?
Sure. I'll mention that I'm continuing to cover the security and crypto beat over at Hackaday.com. And my latest article from a couple of days ago is about a five-year-old vulnerability that suddenly spawned a botnet monster. Wow. Very interesting. Go check it out. Yeah, it is. It's quite the story. And then I'll also mention that you can follow me on Twitter at JP_Bennett. And one more thing, if you see anything crypto or security related that looks real interesting to you, send it over to me and maybe it'll become a Hackaday article.
Wonderful, wonderful. Jonathan, thank you for your assistance as being co-host today. Hopefully none of you heard the jackhammer that's going on right now behind me because they're doing construction out there. And if you didn't hear it, now you'll be wondering, mystified, what the heck I'm talking about. Okay, anyway, so we're all done for the day. We'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.